What's good, everybody? This episode of the podcast is sponsored by DistroKid. They are the go-to for digital music distribution and the easiest way for musicians to get your music onto Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, TikTok, YouTube, and more. They offer unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of their earnings in stores 10 to 20 times faster than any other distributor. Fastest payouts. They help out with automatic splits, cover song clearance, and all kinds of other amazing tools and templates to help you get the most visibility for your releases. I dig this company and appreciate their business model that offers more features than any other distributor at the most affordable price possible for solo musicians, bands, DJs, studio artists, and any other creators that are producing music in their home, and they also offer label services as well. They've got three different tiers to offer creators that start as low as $22.99 a year. That's just $1.92 a month, and even their top tier is just $7.50 per month. And the best part about DistroKid sponsoring the podcast is that they are offering Dan Cable Presents listeners and viewers 30% off your first year membership with DistroKid, making their already affordable prices even cheaper for you. Check out the link in the episode notes. I will also put it in my Instagram bio in the link tree. That link will give you 30% off that first year of service. Super stoked to have DistroKid sponsoring the podcast and cannot thank them enough for their longtime support of this thing. This episode of the podcast is also sponsored by Puff Coffee. Puff is one of my favorite coffee shops in Portland, Oregon. They've got a location off 28th and Stark in Southeast. Their coffee is delicious and everyone that works there is always super friendly. I had the pleasure of staying in their neighborhood for a month or so, and it was just a real treat to have this as my neighborhood coffee shop for a bit. And now I find myself going out of my way to get over there and get some coffee. Puff Coffee was started by the founder of Stumptown Coffee, and they are making small batch coffee roasted daily here in Portland. Their mission, to find, roast, and deliver the most delicious coffees anywhere. Their small batch process means that they get to keep things interesting with experimental blends and single origin gems while always keeping the classics on deck. They've got a variety of beans to choose from, and if you're not in the Portland area, you can order their small batch coffee straight to your home through their website. And you can use the coupon code DANCABLE, all one word, for 20% off a coffee subscription. Links for Puff Coffee will be in the episode notes. Big thanks to Puff for supporting the show and for their amazing small batch coffee. Now let's get into the episode.
Look down at the corner.
What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Dan Cable Presents podcast. Thank you for tuning into the program once again. If this is your first time listening, thanks for checking out the show. You can find fresh episodes coming at you every Tuesday. And if you want to help support this thing in a free way, you can do so by clicking subscribe on iTunes, clicking write a review, giving the podcast 5 stars if you feel like it is deserving of so. And that will help propel this thing into the tops of those iTunes charts, giving it more visibility on the national and international levels, helping strangers find the podcast, and just a great way to contribute to the growth and sustainability of this thing. Appreciate the hell out of all the folks that have already taken the time to do so. If you're not listening on Apple, just hit like, follow, subscribe wherever you are listening from. Give it 5 stars on Spotify. If you're watching on YouTube, hit subscribe there. Tell a friend about the podcast and check out the monthly playlist that I've been dropping every first of the month on Spotify. Pretty spread out genre-wise and just a snapshot of what I'm listening to throughout the month. Links for those will be in the episode notes. Hope everybody is doing well out there. Stoked to get into episode 406 of the podcast with Los Angeles born and raised artist Rosie Tucker. This is an episode that I recorded out of the Treefort Music Fest a couple weeks back out there in Boise, Idaho. It was my fourth time going out to Treefort. Love this festival. It's so well run and put together. It's just been such a killer experience every time out there, and just getting exposed to new music and getting to see some artists that I've been following for a while. So yeah, big thanks to all the people that put together Treefort Music Fest. It's just such a great way to get to explore the city of Boise, as it's a multi-venue festival out there. And I got to see a bunch of Portland friends and bands that were playing out there, as well as some artists that I've been following nationally for a really long time, like Channel Trace, amazing set on the main stage. And Matty Diaz also played at the Treefort Music Hall, which was just like a really incredible set by her. I didn't think that I was going to get to see the whole thing, but once I walked in, I was very locked in, and I definitely was not leaving there. Just an amazing performance, just her and a drummer, and just was such a full sound. The drummer, he was playing synth and he was doing the backup vocals, and you would just almost not know that it was just a two-piece band if you were not actually seeing it. So crazy good set from Matty Diaz. And I tried to take it easy out there this year at Treefort and not have as much of a packed schedule. I went out there with my friend Isabeau. She played day one of the festival, so it was really cool to get to see her play. And instead of doing like 6 to 10 podcasts out there, I just I cut it down to 3, and was just able to like really freely kind of bop around, which was nice, not so tied to a schedule. And I still got 3 really great podcasts done out there as well, which was nice to simplify since I'm doing this whole video setup now and filming all of them. It just it relieves some stress to just to do those 3, and I got 3 really great conversations, including this one that you're going to hear with Rosie Tucker today, and the rest will roll out throughout the month. Things are going to look a little bit different. Obviously, we were not in the studio you see behind me. We were kind of just in this empty conference room, so things are looking a little bit bare, and maybe it comes off like an interrogation room a bit. I don't know, but very thankful to Marissa from the Treefort crew. She was able to carve out the time to find me a dedicated spot to be able to record these, and it was very central to everything, and it just made it very easy. It's tough to record these types of conversations at festivals. Sometimes there's not always a quiet, isolated place to do it, so it was nice to have one, and it made things a lot easier. And my buddy Bert was there with me for a few days and helped set up production and just made sure things were firing, so it was nice to have him out there. And got to spend some time seeing some music with him, so shout out to Bert, thanks for coming out, helping out with the program. And as previously stated, as you can see in the episode title, Rosie Tucker is on the show this week. Had such a great time getting to chat with Rosie at Treefort. I have been a fan of their music for the last few years or so. My entry point to Rosie's music was the Sucker Supreme record that came out in 2021. Love that record, and I was pumped to see that they were on the Treefort lineup. They were the first artists that I reached out to when I saw the lineup come out as far as doing podcasts, and very thankful that Rosie was down to chat with me. It was album release day for Rosie. Their new record, Utopia Now, had just dropped that day, so it was really special to get to hang on a record release day. And they're such a great songwriter, and just a very intelligent, thoughtful person. Their lyrics are so great and thought-provoking, and I just appreciated getting to have this firsthand experience with Rosie and chat with them about their experience as an artist and what it means to not only hold things down creatively, but also on the admin side and the demanding end of the work in the modern day of being an artist and figuring out how to run a business, essentially. So big thanks to Rosie. Congrats on the new Utopia Now record. And yeah, just thankful for the time that we got to have out there at Treefort. Rosie and band are on tour starting April 23rd in San Francisco. And I will put the links for those tour dates in the episode notes so you can see where they might be playing in a town near you. But if you're in the Portland, Oregon area, Rosie Tucker will be playing at Mono Occulta on April 26th. That is a venue that is new to me. Haven't been there yet. And I'm definitely planning to be there. So that Utopia Now record is available wherever you stream music and on vinyl. I got myself a copy here while I was out at Tree Fort. Look at this. It's the new record. Art designed by Rosie. And comes on this really beautiful Rosie colored vinyl. So, you know, cop one of those if you dig this record. And I think that's all the things. We're going to get in to episode 406 of the podcast. And to kick off the episode, we're going to play one of my favorite tracks from that Utopia Now record. This one is called Obscura. Let's do the damn thing. So you can let it fly.
I'm good to go then.
Yesterday yeah. was also very great when you realized that you said fuck like on a live broadcast, but then you played the Louisville Slugger song like immediately after that, and I was like, yeah.
I have never ever succeeded at not cursing on a live broadcast I've ever participated in. With this record, we keep having it happen where they're like, hey, we would love to perhaps play this song on our radio station. Can you go and get a master made of a clean version? It's happened 5 times. And it was like, and then we missed one actually. We just figured out, me and my partner who work on this stuff together, like that the title track of the album, on one of the songs I say bitch ass. And he was like, I didn't even flag it for Spotify. Like, I didn't even, so, yeah.
Yeah, the wild thing about that is, like, someone actually has to complain for it to be an issue. Like, I do this this radio spot back in Portland where I get to play a local artist on mainstream radio, like, every Thursday.
Oh, cool.
And I'm usually, like, very careful about, like, what gets played. And one slipped by one time, and I was just like, oh, I did not know this song said fuck. But no one caught it, so cool. It wasn't an issue. I was like, cool, I'll get to continue to do this, I think.
Subversive.
But stoked to chat with you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it feels extra special to get to chat with somebody on an album release day, because I know how much work goes into something like that. So it feels like a fun day to get to chat with you. So congrats on putting out another record into the world. And I've had, I don't know, the last week or so to sit with it.
Yes, yes.
Get familiar with it. So I'm excited to chat with you about that. And but before we, you know, dive into the present and this new record, take me back to the early days of music. Like, what do you remember, like early memories of music, either as a listener or a player?
I mean, I had like piano lessons okay. as a kid.
All right.
And I think I was kind of very eager to go off book and start making things up pretty immediately. And then I was like a super, super band geek in my middle school time.
What did you play?
I played the trombone.
Okay.
Which is a hard band geek instrument.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you can't really even conceal it from your peers. You're like walking around with a very large brass instrument at all times. It says, I am not one of the cool kids. I will not be joining a sports team.
Did you like it?
I loved it. I think it's a beautiful instrument, and I think that learning a instrument that relies on breath was really important for melody writing. I think you can tell when someone has started on like a guitar or a piano and that they will write melodies that are just kind of like too many notes forever. Yeah. But when it's a breath-oriented instrument, it's you're more likely to create something that feels like speaking because the natural limitations are kind of built in. So I think trombone is cool.
Do you feel like that taught you a lot about like playing with an ensemble of people too, like taught you a lot about music at an early age and just figuring out how to fit in amongst a large group of people playing music?
I certainly feel that way, especially the trombone is a sliding pitch instrument, and so developing the ear is so important. And blend. All of these things correspond very nicely with singing.
Yeah.
And then later I was like in high school, I was playing bass guitar in bands a lot and in one band a lot. We were very dedicated. And I think that the bass is also an instrument that is, so communal. It's the glue between, you know, our harmonic section and our rhythm section. And I truly miss participating more in like an ensemble format. It's really, really fun to play and sing my songs. It's satisfying and, you know, it's very satisfying.
I promise I've done this before. Like 400 times I've done this podcast.
I feel like how relaxed you are indicates you have done this before. I feel like hypervigilance is the province of the new. and mistakes are the province of the veterans, you know. But yeah, I love playing music with other people, and I kind of miss the experience of not being the center of what is happening musically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems to give you like a different perspective when you get to do those things, and maybe free in a different way.
You can relax.
The center of everything.
Yes.
Did you keep up with it sounds like there's often some piano happening like on the records, or at least maybe you're still using that as a writing tool.
Kind of returned to it a little bit on this record. I'm not, as an instrumentalist, I feel like my major shortcoming is that I will get good enough to write the songs. And so I am not putting in enough hours. Like this year, I had my childhood piano, like my parents for a birthday present, I guess about a year ago, had it moved to where I am now. And I learned like two pieces of written music, like 75% of the way. And I was like, cool, enough studying. Like I'm going to block chords songs now. So it's in there, but it's everything gets eaten alive by the songwriting habit musically.
Yeah. And you gravitated towards the songwriting pretty quickly, like moved away from, you know, learning the covers or things like that and just kind of jumped into your own expressions pretty quickly.
Yes. And I think that's why I really need to be in a band of some kind where I am not writing if I'm going to actually be a good musician, because it's too tempting. It's too tempting to make things up. And then I only get good enough at the instrument to like be making up my songs. And then I only get good enough at playing the songs. This with tour is an exception. Tour is very important for that, but I only get good enough at playing the songs to be able to record them. And I always feel like I am just like at the edge of my own abilities. I never feel like I'm relaxing into anything ever. Yeah.
Just addicted to the songwriting.
Yes.
What do you think drew you into songwriting early on and expressing yourself in that way? Cause it seems like throughout your catalog of records thus far, it's, maybe often used as a way to process the world around you and kind of as this diary at times?
I think so. It's like, it's diary-esque in that there is a lot of honesty. Like a song can kind of live or die on whether or not it rings genuine with people. But I think what is interesting about song is it is a very unique craft. People are always wanting to know if it's like the music or the lyrics happen first.
Yeah.
But in my experience, it's not like writing and it is not like composing. It is truly a very mysterious synthesis of those where things just sort of emerge, sometimes fully formed, but definitely when the pieces of a song emerge, it's lyric and melody together and they are inextricable. A melody is kind of useless in a song. It can support what's happening. We can have all kinds of lines swirling around, but lyric that is not informed by melody can be kind of clunky, and it can still be enlightening and cool.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's clunky, and melody not informed by lyric can be transcendent and can be something that is beautiful to listen to in the car. Some of my favorite records have terrible lyrics, but are so meaningful to me.
Yeah. Does anything come to mind when you say that?
I'm thinking about, we were without cell service driving up to Boise. And so I had like three different Imogen Heap albums saved. And she is a genius. She is a genius, God-tier musician to me. Production unmatched. It's pop, but it is so fresh. All the stuff that came out in like 2001, like the frou-frou stuff, just, it's like you wouldn't know what year this happened because it's so itself and it feels like it could have come out yesterday. It's so good. And her lyrics are like total nonsense, gibber. They feel very stream of consciousness, I guess.
And they're very much just like layers of instrumentation almost for the songs rather than this like vocal narrative.
Yes. And they do not detract at all. And so there is still lyrical skill in there because a lyric can be so bad that it removes you.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not exactly about the poetry, or rather her musical genius is infusing poetry into very simple sentiments. And like in listening to that music as a young person, I did not find it to be lacking in any way. I felt very moved by her lyrics, but the music gave it that. It's kind of like the music and the language are like either giving or pulling, resting on each other the whole way.
Yeah. So there's not like a whole lot of time where you're just sitting down and writing lyrics?
Not at all. And I'm very, I'm kind of a frenetic, frantic person. And I get frustrated pretty easily, I think. And so I've learned at this point that I'll sit down and I'll write for 15 or 20 minutes. And then I'm like, fuck this. Like, I'm done. I hate this. I hate art. I hate everything. And then you do that enough times and something catches. And then it's like, okay, I can spend 4 hours now. Like, there's enough of a thing here, you know?
Well, it's like also like knowing when you're exhausted with the thing, too. Like, it doesn't seem fun to create art when you're frustrated with it, you know, and forcing yourself or trying to force something out when it's not happening, like makes it even more frustrating. And I know that you made this record like in your home studio this time around, right? So I'd imagine that gave you more freedom to just kind of go at your own pace too, and not have to be like locked into a studio and being like, we have 10 hours today. Everything needs to happen in this day.
It is so beautiful, and for this record in particular, where I feel there was a lot of I was really wrestling with the concept of continuing to try and do this artist project in a dedicated way. So having the privilege of not having there be this pressure on it was so beautiful. And most of my records have been not done in paid studios. It's been in, you know, a studio where someone is working a job. And okay. So we can use time there. Yeah. we've done a lot of recording at home. All of the vocals on Sucker Supreme were recorded in an apartment, like in a closet, and it was the summer and we had no AC and we had to create a, you know, baffling with like pillows and blankets. And so I was just like sweating. I feel like there are very few overdubs. There are very few harmonies on that record. And I think it was just a due to global warming, honestly.
It was too hot.
Yeah.
I'm not going back in to do any harmonies.
Exactly.
Have you always felt pretty comfortable in the recording of a record as far as capturing vocals, or is it like take something to turn it on for you? Or like when you were talking about earlier about getting frustrated, like do things need to feel right for you to be like, today we're going to record some vocals? Or are you pretty good at kind of turning it on at any time?
There are physical limitations, and I do want to share about this because I don't know if people ever talk about it, but like people with menstrual cycles, like it's very impacting of what I am able to achieve physically singing. So that was a limitation we were working around. But for me, the recording process is kind of, it's most frustrating in the beginning of my part of it, where I'm recording rhythm guitars and bass. I think that the metronome is so unforgiving. We're on the grid. Even if it's something I've played live a million times, it's very difficult to not be obsessively perfectionist, and it's kind of the most boring part. And then everything from there onward is just ideating and looking for textures and problem solving. And then there's the singing. And by the time I'm singing, I've spent so much time just building out the track that it's like a playground. It's really fun.
So that's the part you enjoy the most then? You feel like you're kind of just like close to the finish line too?
It's easy. That doesn't mean that I don't get frustrated. There are many opportunities to be frustrated in recording. And I used to be a lot more fearful. And I'm finally just kind of recognizing where the limitations are, and when to stop, as opposed to being like, I have to force through, you know, we have to keep going. But yeah, the singing is the most fun. Yeah.
Were you always pretty eager to share what you were writing early on? And do the performance part of things?
I think yes. Yes. I know some people experience a great deal of shyness about it. But for me, the feeling of having completed a new song is like, there's nothing in the world like it. And having, you know, it's like I'll come to a place where I'm like, okay, I think this is done. I think this is a song. And then I will play it just on loop physically myself for hours, just kind of working out exactly. You shave a syllable here, you articulate something different here. And then the feeling of like, okay, I'm ready to show people is, it's very, very good. It's very vulnerable as well. And I don't even have as many opportunities as I once did, since now when I'm performing, it's generally with a band and in a more kind of structured and planned way. I'm not just like running around with an acoustic guitar.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a great feeling. Yeah.
So like yesterday when I saw you play at the record store, you did this solo set. Does that feel even more vulnerable than playing with a band?
It's so much more vulnerable. There's nothing between you and the audience, and it can lead to some amazing interactions, but it also, you have to be kind of constantly reading, like, okay, just because people are not being loud doesn't mean they don't like what's happening. Sometimes there's like a respectful watchfulness that is actually, people are having a really good time, but they're just making no noise. But for me, it feels like, holy shit, everyone hates me and I am amplified and I have no choice but to continue subjecting these strangers to myself. Like that is, yes, it can feel vulnerable.
Is there maybe some extra freedom in not having to be strapped to a set list in those types of environments, though?
Yeah, it's freedom to give in to my most chaotic impulses. And when I was younger, oh my God, I would never practice for anything. And I would just be, it was no plan. And it was so scary. And I would come away sometimes feeling like almost physically high, like elated if things went well. And if things didn't go well, just the self-esteem was like, it was brutal. I think there's a lot of freedom and stability for a certain type of person who is not prone to stability.
Yeah.
It can be liberating to not be subject to my own chaos.
Is it, how do you feel like the live show has developed over time for you with where you're at a few records deep into this and all your experience of playing bass in bands and fronting this band?
I feel like it is getting more fun every show to play with a band. And I won't be using the setup at Treefort, but I've recently started incorporating some synthesizer and like other kinds of textures. And so it has been really exciting to kind of be trying to keep things light and like dense and like, okay, we're four people, like we're not bringing a keys player, we're not gonna try and be like a pop band, but what can we as musicians work out with one another in this space? And I think that that's where tour is really magic as well, because you start to be able to catch on with the other people, and then different patterns and things start to emerge where it's like, oh, maybe there's a kick pattern in the record that is just there, but then on tour everyone starts to notice it and like create something new together. Yeah. There
you get to like really figure out how the record should be played live and these songs.
Exactly.
Grew up in Los Angeles?
Yes, the Valley. 818 represent.
Brody Stevens. I'm curious, and like pretty religious family you grew up in, right?
Yes.
I'm curious how you feel like growing up in Los Angeles, and you're still there now. Mm-hmm. Growing up in Los Angeles and coming from a religious family, like how do you feel like that has informed your music and what you write?
Dan, I really love this question because there is such a strong geographic component to like how Christianity functions in this country.
Absolutely.
So I feel so much gratitude, and my parents have also shifted a great deal in how they relate to religion, as many people have culturally, kind of as things have become polarized. So I don't need to give the whole denominational rundown of things, but basically I feel like Southern California is interesting because like Orange County is actually kind of the place where so much of the evangelical culture came from.
Yeah, it's like the epicenter of that stuff. It's crazy.
It is. And we really associate it with like the Midwest or the South. I think the coastal liberals think that it's all happening in the middle when it is not at all. There's like, you know, a think tank in Colorado Springs, Focus on the Family or whatever, like it's nationwide. But yeah, so much of that history is SoCal. My parents met in Orange County when my dad was a Marine and my mom was like a Christian party girl. Very Christian, very partying is my impression of that. But so I feel really grateful that they landed in Los Angeles, because LA is, and the Valley is, just a truly unique place. Lots of people from lots and lots of different backgrounds. I went to Catholic school for most of my schooling, and that was a horrible experience. But so many of the people who were in the Catholic school were from so many different religions. I grew up in a very Jewish neighborhood. There were, lots of people whose families were Hindu or Muslim, a lot of Persian people, just like a fairly multicultural experience for the fact that I was in Christian schooling. And I think that just having that perspective, the school was very controlling, but the students themselves were kind of like, this is not the world.
Yeah.
And that, I think, enabled me to begin the process of like finding my own freedom and vibe, and also gay.
Yeah. So do you feel like you're often processing that stuff through the music and thinking back on those times?
I think for a time I was much more interested in it. In my day to day now, I do not feel like I'm more at peace. I don't have as much processing to do, but it does kind of crop up in unexpected ways. As with anything in your childhood, you're like,
it's weird.
I'm done with that. Like I like trauma free, branded, we're done. Like, you know, green check mark. And then, yeah, you go, whoa, I didn't even know I was hanging on to that.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. I revealed something to a friend the other night, and I was just like, a memory that I had suppressed or something, like just something I hadn't thought about in a long time. I was like, damn, why is this even happening to me right now?
Yeah.
Do you feel like has songwriting always felt like really important to just you figuring things out for yourself and being able to put things on paper, even if you're not, you know, sitting down and writing lyrics on its own? Like, does it always feel like it's doing something positive for your psyche? Like, do you think that's why you keep coming back to it?
I think yes. In you asking that question, I think that what is very cool about having this art that is simultaneously about language and not at all about language is it's a great way of getting into the problems that language can't fix, which is like so many of our challenges in relationships and stuff. I have found I cannot think my way out of. I can't think my way out of a feeling or a memory. The processing doesn't happen there. And I'm a very thinky person. I want to write things down, and I want to, almost like a math problem or a proof or something, say, okay, well, this is why I should no longer be feeling bad about this.
Yeah.
But still I am. And so I think that songwriting is really cool because it does like a mirror thing. Like, it's refracting the light. I can throw emotions at it. But the process of putting a song together is a craft. It's a skill. And so it kind of takes me away from focusing on the emotion, and it lets me focus on trying to put something together that is pleasing for me to interact with. And then usually by the end of it, I actually have some pretty interesting observations, but it's so unconscious. It's really cool.
Yeah. I love your lyrics and just your delivery of things. Like, it seems like it covers such a wide range of emotions, and sometimes it's just like fun and playful in the way that you deliver certain things. Like, just even thinking about the new record, when you're talking about how you hope that, like, the person that is making the thing is not pissing in a bottle to make sure it gets to you, and, you know, things like that. I feel like, you know, it's like, it's serious, but it has this playfulness to it. And there's also some like really heavy things. So
I hope no one had to piss in a bottle at work to get me the thing I ordered on the internet. But I am no responsible party. I'm just a middle-sized fish in a pile of plastic, wider than Texas, a pile of plastic. You wonder why I'm a poor sport, squeezing the pores in the bathroom. I'm not ready yet to go back to the people. Fall short every chance that I give you. Say, speak for yourself.
Seems to be like revealing about yourself, but also like maintains this mystery to it. Has that always felt like a fine line for you, as far as not over revealing or being like too on the nose versus like maintaining the mystery to the lyrics?
Definitely. I think that's a very astute observation. And I think that that is also what craft gives us, is the ability to be like completely honest without being completely vulnerable. Because total vulnerability is like not, maybe there are artists who engage that way, but
yeah,
I cannot. Like, I save my total vulnerability for a very, very small handful of people because I think that's healthy. So, yeah, I think that it's a way of kind of like transmuting the desire to share and connect and making it safe.
Yeah. Before you put this new record out, you revisited an old record and did this Casio version.
Oh, that was all Wolfie. That was all okay. Wolfie. Wolfie is obsessed with covering my records, which he has also produced.
So you didn't have like a whole lot to do with messing with that?
I have nothing to do with that. I feel like I cannot imagine. Sometimes I feel like listening to the music is like looking at photos or videos of myself.
Yeah.
It's like you can do it and you can be like, whoa, that was me at a time. And you can have like the radical acceptance of how your face looks from every angle or whatever. But it still takes a little bit of courage. But no, Wolfie, my partner in life and art, and who I'm doing, you know, who I put out the record with, he loves covering albums. He's on this like quixotic quest to cover every One Direction album in a different style. He just finished the shoegaze one.
That's incredible.
So he has covers of every album I've ever written in the works, if not out yet, in the works. Yeah.
When you listen to something like that, since everything else does feel like maybe like these photographs or, you know, tapping into a place and time where you were at making that music, when you listen to those Casio versions of those songs, does it make you think any differently about those tunes, or like, does it help in any way break them down in any sort of like serving way that impacts the songwriting moving forward, or like where songs can go or anything like that?
I think it just makes me laugh. I feel like, I don't know, I feel like I'm always amazed. And mostly I just feel like this admiration for my music partner, because the ways that we relate to music are just so drastically different, which is beautiful. And that's what you need in your life, are people who have different skills than you and different ways of looking at things. Yeah. I usually just feel like, wow, like you have so much talent in so many arenas where I am lacking, and like I do not understand how you relate to so much of this. Yeah.
Do you feel like it's those differences then is what Wolfie brings out of your tunes that you can't see for yourself?
Definitely. There's so much trust that is required. And I think that it is very, very personal to share and work on music. And so I feel very grateful that like my life has kind of grown up in this very homespun. Like I would want to do it at home. It's not just a limitation. It's how I relate to it. Yeah. And I think that Wolfie is one of his real gifts is in bringing details that help structure things so that they have the correct arc, like dynamic wise. And so I feel like I have the opportunity to just kind of be relentlessly creative. And if I'm like, I want to put a saxophone on it, then like we have to, because it's my music. And then I kind of feel like when it comes to making it work, it's always collaborative, but Wolfie is just a very talented engineer and is very talented at
like is a deep love and study of a wide variety of genres, and so is really able to kind of like, I almost imagine this like matrix of all of these different musical, like pop music tropes and possibilities. And it's like a crazy grid that I imagine, or like the fucking Dark Knight Batman surveillance system is like Wolfie with pop music. And he's like, oh, I think that this sound needs to happen here. Yeah. And like, he just can pull it out of nowhere. And he doesn't even always think that that counts as creativity, but like it's massively creative to me.
Dude, it's so impressive, like engineers and producers that are like that. I've been watching a record get made for the last like couple months with a friend, and it's just so impressive to see like what he's able to pull. He's like, you know that one record from 2001, and they do that, there's this specific sound, and he's like, I think we should do that here. And I'm just like, what are you, how do you store all this in your brain?
Yes. And also the ability to be working in a very linear fashion, which is so important to like getting a record completed. Like I am a knob turner. If I am left to my own devices, we end up with like ambient music. I enjoy encountering a musical tool, and I know what the knobs do. I can know what this LFO does when I set it in this particular way, but I am not going in with a preconceived notion of what I'm looking for unless I have lost a sound on the instrument and then I have to build it again. Then I can usually get there. But I am very exploratory, and Wolfie is very much specific and looking to go and structure something specific. And so yeah, for me, coming from a blank place and having a vision of what you want to build and then understanding your tools enough to go and build it is just very brilliant in a way that I am not.
Do you think because there's the life partnership aspect and not it just being a creative relationship, that there's also this you're able to be more honest with one another and dive deeper into the process? Or yeah, I don't know if that makes sense, but
it totally does. And I think that there actually has been in some ways a learning curve around the total honesty that you usually need.
Yeah.
If you're relating to a partner, you need to relate to them in complete honesty. And if you are working on a creative project, you need to figure out how to communicate specifically within the moment so that you can continue working. It's a very different communication style. If I am like in life, I can be very honest about where are my insecurities today with my partner. But if I'm in the studio and I'm like, I just don't think I'm a good guitar player, like then what we are now doing is not recording. We are working through my issues and fears. and so sometimes I am like, I am amazed. I am amazed at how much time we spend together and in how many different facets our lives are engaged and how working it is. It feels very special to me. And I know it's not an unusual type of format. I think a lot of people have these kind of romantic partnerships that are also art partnerships. But it just feels like, you know, boundaries are so important in any relationship to begin with. And there are times when it's like, whoa, wouldn't it be, I don't think better, but just like, wouldn't it be different if we had totally different jobs? And like, I got home and I said, I just want to complain about my job for 30 minutes. And you can say, yeah, that fucking sucks. Like, what a horrible day. What a horrible job. I hate all of those people. Like, you should quit. Just kidding. Let's make dinner. Like, as opposed to having someone who is like so up on the plot and like we together are having to manage our own selves and continue moving, and also finding the moments where you are not doing that and where you are just chilling hard or being vulnerable. It's a different type of thing.
Yeah. All right, Rosie, I feel like we're caught up. We're here. We're t- talk to me about Utopia Now, this brand new record that you're celebrating, and maybe how your previous experiences, maybe these previous records, have informed the way you wanted to go about putting this one out.
Oh man, I am so excited about this record, and it's birthday today as we're talking, which is so cool. This record feels to me, so my second full-length record was called Never Not, and it was made without a label. There was no one to put it out until it was done. And it was a beautifully creative and I feel very free experience, free from expectations. And this record, Utopia Now, I feel is very much a sibling to Never Not. I made the artwork for both of these records, the cover, and I feel there's like some kind of cohesion in the both the color scheme and the collage nature of them. I was on a big label called Epitaph, and I was dropped about halfway through recording this record, and I was ready to go to grad school. I was ready to be done. I was like, okay, the universe is saying, like, stop, just stop. And it was Wolf. I came downstairs the next morning and Wolfie was like, I have a 6-month plan. We can put out the record ourselves. It's not dead. We can do it. And I became angry. I was like, this is very inconsiderate. I can't believe you would be trying to make this happen. I had not processed yet, I think. And he was so ready to go. But now I feel so much gratitude for all of the industrial entities which released me from my contracts. I feel like I am functioning so much closer to my own genuine self, as opposed to feeling fear about whether something does or does not succeed. It feels more like a kind of curiosity has been restored. I do not know what's going to happen. I only know what I'm doing with my day. Yeah. And it has also restored me to musical community, because every piece of the work of this has entailed, I left a manager about 6 months before I got dropped. And so I'm just in this place where every piece of it has me interacting firsthand with the process of the production. And it has been very beautiful. And I think that coming out of pandemic lockdown times, we all had our communities decimated by not being able to engage in a firsthand way with one another. And so I think that I had kind of that, plus some kind of icky music industry type experiences, had left me feeling pretty faithless at the idea of like an arts community. But I could not put out this record without help. And so I feel like it just piece by piece rebuilt for me my whole relationship with doing this and with relating to other people through my own art making. It's been amazing.
Yeah. Yesterday you even mentioned that you feel so much closer to the process because you are doing everything so independently, down to shipping the records out yourself. So yeah, what does that feel like for you to be so hands-on with all aspects of it?
It's so cool. It's administratively for me as an individual kind of a nightmare, because I am so challenged by the multifaceted deadline nature of this. It's kind of like everything is backwards planning, and you kind of will look forward like a year in the future, and then you know almost to the week what needs to be happening every week until that point, until today. And that is so, I am so chaotic. I am not an organized thinker. That was really, really scary, but the closeness to the process is amazing. I love sharing and shipping the records. I feel so much like love and affection for the fact that anyone is paying attention. It totally changes my sense of scale, because when I had people saying, you're gonna, you know, do this at this particular level and you're gonna be a star, babe, like whatever, I think that it put me in this kind of like deficit mindset where it was like, oh, I hope that I have enough. I hope that enough people come. I hope enough people listen today.
Yeah.
I hope that enough news outlets write about me. I hope enough people think that I'm cool. It just was a perspective that was very damaging. And I think no one is a stranger to this perspective in the time of social media. We all have encountered in our various creative endeavors this pressure to be a successful product, and it can become confused with the desire to succeed holistically, which can still entail having cool experiences where people show up or appreciate what you have put so much effort into, but it can get very confused. And so when there is no infrastructure except for you, there is no confusion. It's just cool that someone bought a record.
Yeah, I know in your press releases for this record, it speaks to, you know, not feeling like the measuring the success has to be related to like expansion of the thing. What do you mean by that? Is it just like everything you're talking about there as far as like having these expectations of things doing certain things or getting a certain amount of write-ups for the record and whatnot?
I am talking about that. I feel that in having a music artist project, I am very much inundated with data as a business. So my link tree will say, oh, hey, guess what? Fewer people clicked on your link tree this week than last week. Here's a little red down arrow. Yeah. And it kind of is that over just countless apps and platforms, kind of measuring it. It for me, it recalls like weight tracking culture, like calorie counting culture, where it's very much like, you know, disordered eating culture that says, hey, reduce everything that you're doing to this very simple thing that your brain can catch on, and try obsessing about that and tying all of your self-worth to it. Yeah. Like maybe that will make you feel better. And there's just this huge pressure to everyone has the opportunity to kind of corporatize themselves right now, because we live in a gig work culture. Increasingly, everyone is a freelancer. And so just to make your living and file your taxes, you have to be in this kind of other mode, which is it's psychologically very challenging to engage with and to retain what is pure and good about what you set out to do in the first place. I think a lot of people are finding that even their corporate day jobs are unsustainable, at least in Los Angeles. My friends, you know, being a paralegal pays still minimum wage for some people, and they can barely make rent. And so it's like, I guess I'm going to try and be an artist. And what does that mean? It means making as much video content as possible. So yeah, and I'm in a position of like generational wealth, and that has enabled me to I mean, for one thing, to pay fairly if I'm engaging labor, which is a privilege actually.
Yeah.
So that is a really important thing to highlight, because a lot of people do not know how much of a factor that is in successful musicians' careers currently, as I've seen it. So I'm very, very privileged to do this in the way that I am able to do it. But also, I think that from that vantage point, I feel compelled to express to people how very stacked against them it is in an art way, because I know so many people who are so talented and so capable and just amazing artists, but due to you know, various ways of being marginalized, cannot cannot have certain experiences that they feel like would be very affirming of their art making. And it's not because their art isn't good enough, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. Yeah. You know? It's like, it's not just about making the art. It's about being this small business and having all these resources and constantly trying to put out content one after another. And it doesn't always make it fun. Leads to that frustration.
And it's so all consuming as well.
Yeah.
It leaves very little room for recreating. And I think that a lot of us come to our creative endeavors because they renew us from the other portions of our lives that like suck us dry of our energy and happiness. And it is a challenge that anyone trying to make a leap over into doing this with more of their time has to face. It's not just our economic situation that it makes this challenging, but it is a real challenge to sustain the love in the face of the all-consuming demand of the work.
Absolutely. Yeah, even doing this podcast like week to week, it's like I love getting to sit down and have these conversations. I feel like very privileged to get to like sit down with people like yourself and talk about your art and do the deep dive. But it's also like churning these things out like one week after another, especially doing it DIY, can feel like such a burden. And it's just like, all right, on to the next one. We made it again. We survived another week of doing the thing.
And you saying that is so eye-opening to me because it feels like, first of all, what you're doing is so important to what I'm doing. You and I are members of an ecosystem that is like very interrelated. To have people who are thoughtfully relating to art and transmitting it and helping process it is so vital to any art form. And it is, I don't know, it's sort of sad to think about the fact that all of the people who are so thoughtfully bringing themselves to the art are similarly feeling the squeeze. Like, and we just have these like brief moments of like, hi, Dad, like we're here.
Yeah.
We're experiencing our time on this planet together at this brief intersection. And then we can go back to being stressed about our inboxes, you know, like, I don't know.
Well, I'm glad we're getting to experience this, this time together, especially on record release day. Again, it's very cool. There's a lot of cool production on this record, but Utopia Now, the self-titled track, is the stripped down track on the record. It kind of feels like this demo almost that made it onto the record. Can you just talk to me about the importance of maybe having a track like that on the record in contrast to, you know, the stuff that has a lot of different flair to it and just kind of that raw version of that track on there?
Yes. This is another way in which this album is a sibling to Never Not, because on the record Never Not, the song Never Not was like a total just a night hanging out with a friend. I was like, I have this weird piece of a song in 7 and I want to record it for fun. It was like we had never recorded together. It was someone I was in a band with in high school. It just felt like this is who the record belongs to, is this little tiny song. And I feel the same with Utopia Now. And I feel like there's something kind of like, I don't know, cheeky and tricky in designating this like little track as the title track.
Yeah.
It feels like, don't take this shit too seriously. Like, remember what we're doing. We're making up stupid little poems about our feelings and we're setting them to music. And then we're going to spend a lot of effort and time telling people about it. Like, don't get it twisted. This is for pleasure. This is for stupid. Like, who cares? I don't know.
Don't forget to have fun.
Do not forget or you will die.
It's one of my favorite tracks on the record.
Thank you. Yeah,
absolutely. Just to wrap things up, Where do you feel like you're at now? Like, where do you feel like you recognize the most growth in your process or your songwriting or just who you are as a person from when you first started putting out records to where we're at today with Utopia now?
I think that kind of like curiosity about what comes next feels like the biggest, I don't know, like like gold nugget of this process. Finally feeling like just elated at the mystery of my own limited understanding kind of puts me back in the gratitude spot and enables me to imagine my own creativity in a more multifaceted way. I don't know what I am going to write next. I don't know how it's going to sound. I am, because of this record, more able to make peace with the not knowing. And that makes me a better person to be around. That makes me, in moments of stress, more able to tap into kind of a memory of gratitude and peacefulness, which means that I am, you know, I'm not as tight. I'm not as nervous. I'm able to access my chill more. So yeah, I think that's what's coming, I hope.
Right on. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with me and giving me some of your time today.
Dude, thank you for asking so many wonderful questions and letting me talk so much.
Absolutely. Please, thank you for talking so much. That's all I can hope for in these conversations is that the guest has something to say. And it's fun to get to know you beyond just listening to your records. I've been a fan since Sucker Supreme came out. Some of those tracks made it into, sometimes that algorithm is serving and you find a lot of cool shit. And I'm glad that I found your music and stoked on this new record for you. I'll make sure to put all the links in the episode notes so people can keep up with you. And Rosie, we end every episode with the guest saying the tagline for the show, which is, it's a program, and it means absolutely nothing. It's just the way my grandfather says the word program, like when he's talking about the news. Oh, turn on the news program. Or like if you're in school, oh, what school program are you in? It's just a goofy way to end the show. It's also the one time I'll ask you to look into that camera, and you can deliver this, it's a program, however you would like to.
Okay. It's a program.
They nailed it, everybody. It's Rosie Tucker. Brand new record, Utopia Now, is out on all the things. Pick up a vinyl copy. I got one yesterday. Rosie signed it for me. And stoked to put that on my turntable. And that's all the things. That's the Jelly Jams. And we will catch you on the flip side. Treefort, Portland, Los Angeles, wherever you're listening from.
Cool.
We did it. Contact, cause anything's a poison in the right dose, and everybody bites when you get close. Baby, are you